A Radiance in the Gulag by Sedulnate. Chapter 12. Freedom and Persecution. On July 7th, 1980, my exile ended, and I flew home by way of Riga, Latvia. Alighting at the Riga airport, I was met by a white Volga from the Vilnius KGB. Without any documents or order, they seated me in their car and took me to Vilnius. It appears that Father Alphonsus Silvesticus and a few other priests and faithful had come to Riga to meet me. They wanted to take me to the festival of the Blessed Mother at Zmiechu, Kalvarija. Czechists from Riga chased them out of the airport. The Czechists spirited me away so there would be no welcome. In spite of all the KGB threats, very formal welcoming ceremonies were arranged for me in many parishes in Lithuania, in which a large number of children, youth, and adults participated. I would tell them of my odyssey, my arrest, interrogation, prisons where I was incarcerated, the concentration camp in Siberia, always emphasizing that throughout those 6 years, I often felt that without the will of God, not a hair falls from our head. We must all trust in Him and not fear any persecution, but work as much as we are able for the good and the glory of God. Fear is the beginning of betrayal. We have to fear only that we work and worry too little about the things of Christ and the Church, and there is too little sacrifice in our lives. Let us not be chary of ourselves. Let us lean on Christ, and we shall be unbeatable. And through the prosecutor's office, they would threaten to imprison me together with female criminals. They began to carry out their promises when the former KGB chief Andropov became ruler of the Soviets. The Czechists gave themselves free rein and began throwing their weight around as never before. From the Chronicle, number 45, October 22, 1980. Following the trial of Dr. Algirdas Stathvesgius, between September 11 to 16, the prosecutor's office of the SSR officially warned Yulia Sadulnate, Andreas Dukas, Aldrigius Masilonis, Ginut Sakelina, and Vateltis Mugusis, that they behaved improperly at the trial, and they were warned not to attend any more trials. Nyola Sedunate is free, but her persecution continues. While in exile, she was deprived of many letters from abroad, but most of them did eventually reach her. After returning to freedom, she wrote letters to her friends abroad, but did not receive any single reply for 4 months. Soviet censors confiscate them all. Gifts to Nyola are also confiscated. From the Chronicle, number 48, June 29, 1981. On June 11, 1981, Nyola Sadulnate wrote a statement to the chief judge of the Lithuanian SSR Supreme Court requesting a copy of the verdict in her June 16 to 17, 1975 trial, because the documents of the court verdict had been confiscated from her by the Barnashiv Mordovia labor camp administration the day she arrived at the camp and had not been returned, despite her written request that the document be returned. On June 24th, Assistant Judge M. Igotnius of the Lithuanian SSR Supreme Court sent the following reply to Sadulnate's request. This is to inform you that a copy of the verdict in your criminal case was given to you once, and copies of verdicts in this type of case are not issued a second time. After returning from Siberia, I wanted to get work as cleaning woman in a store, but the order was given in the card section that such work was too good for me, and if the directness took me on, she would be driven from her job. Afterwards, I obtained employment at the church in Pazir as a helper doing laundry, taking care of church vestments and sanctuary in the gardens. For that, like all church employees, I pay the state income tax. But this restriction of employment was nothing compared to what followed. First, as revenge against me, they decided, as they had promised earlier, to take care of my brother. They trumped up charges against him and shut him up in a psychiatric hospital. The very day after they confined my brother, on November 19, 1982, I sent an urgent telegram to my uncle in the West, saying, "They have put Alias in the psychiatric hospital. Kneel." At baptism, my brother was given two names, Jonas Aliosis. My uncle, in his letter, recalls him as Alias and me, Kneel. My uncle, as far as I know, did not receive the telegram. No return receipt reached me, although I paid 21 rubles and 64 kopecks to send the telegram, almost an entire month's salary. The KGB from Vilnius seized the telegram, which, had been sent to my uncle, and in response to my letter, November 22, 1982, a provocation took place. I went to the psychiatric hospital to visit my brother. I was set upon by the head of the section, KGB agent Dr. R. Raznicki, and expelled. "Get out of here! You have no right to visit this place!" No sooner had I left than she made a phone call, and a Czechist visited me incognito, the one who had been in charge of the raid at our place in October 1982. He and his militiamen had hoped to catch me before I could get off the grounds, and regretted missing me. Under the direction of a Czechist, they put together a report saying that I had insulted Dr. Raznicki. No matter how she treated her staff, the untruthful report was signed by only two Poles, Nurse Jaudze Stanzica and medical aide Chelsla Jeminski. All the other workers and persons present refused to sign, and many of them suffered for it, especially for those who had managed to speak to me. The KGB is especially annoyed by the fact that their criminal activities are transmitted abroad as soon as they happen. Then the poor things complain that they are being libeled, and they confine innocent people to prisons and psychiatric hospitals. According to a bit of folk wisdom, the more they beat you, the more they yell. That same day, they brought David Svelnoviv, who had come from England at his brother's invitation, from the psychiatric section to Section 1, which is under the jurisdiction of the KGB. His brother works for the KGB. They wanted to recruit David, but failed, and shut him up in the psychiatric hospital. In Section 1, a person is treated in such a way that after 2 months he does not know his own name. They do not allow anyone to visit Svelnyov, nor is he allowed to receive food parcels. Others who were with him, including 20-year-old German men from Valsovia, were shut up for their religious beliefs. At Mrs. Resnikin's orders, they used to receive massive daily injections of aminazine and spent the whole day in a kind of sleep. Sometime later, they took the young German away and shut him up in the psychiatric hospital of Chironsnovice. In this way, Mrs. Rosnicke, with the help of the KGB, takes care of recalcitrants. May God forgive her. The next day, 3 militiamen with a van and documents came to take me, but that time, with the help of God, I was able to slip away. Many times afterward, the KGB and militia had looked for me on various pretexts. I have been avoiding those comrades only because I would still like to be as much service as the Lord allows to people struggling for the truth and for their rights. I am ready at all times to go to prison joyfully, and if the Lord should grant such a grace, to die for that. On June 8, 1983, the Supreme Court in Vilnius, in response to my brother's appeal, commuted his sentence on May 24, 1983, to 18 months of conditional compulsory labor. On July 6, he was put to work on the Soviet farm in Geretiki as a brigade member in the plant conservatory section. The position had long been unfilled because no one wished to work with chemical herbicides harmful to one's health. On July 24th, I spoke with my brother by telephone, and he told me all about it. Immediately afterward, on July 26th, on the basis of hastily telegraphed orders from the Ministry of Internal Affairs, he was transferred to a construction job in the city of Janova. The superintendent of construction was surprised that although there was nothing against him, he had been transferred from Gerdeki as well as an agronomy specialist. He had been very necessary to do very hard physical labor, digging and mixing concrete, when there is no shortage of labor there. Not quite 3 months had passed when my brother had a hernia operation. He suffers from chronic pleurisy, angina, and bronchitis. Several years ago, the doctors forbade him to work in the field as an agronomist on account of his poor health. That's why he had transferred to the Experimental Institute. Now he was working with criminals on construction, living in a dormitory to which he must return immediately after work. He is allowed to visit his wife and 7-year-old daughter, Mirza, in Vilnius, only on days off. Each time, he must register with the militia. On September 15, 1983, they placed my brother in the Jelova Rayon Hospital, tuberculosis section, because they found a spot on his lungs. He suffered night fevers of 101 degrees and complete hoarseness, complicated by acute bronchitis. The next day, he received a summons from the KGB to report September 19th to Czechist Vildis Bolmulda in Vilnius for interrogation. Frightened, my brother's physician, Dr. Maltunye, of the tuberculosis section, gave him verbal permission to go for the interrogation, even though the journey from Jonova to Vilnius and back took about 6 hours. On September 9th, Czechist Bolmulda interrogated my brother for 3 hours. He showed my brother letters from me, Vladis Lapinas and Petrus Paluitas, written from camp, copied over in my brother's hand, which Jonas had kept stored in his basement archive so they wouldn't be destroyed. However, the basement was torn up and the copies of the letters seized. The Czechist accused my brother of handing those copies over to Father Stigatus Kamkievicus, saying that they had found them at the priest's home during a raid. My brother said that he did not know who had torn up his basement and taken the copies of the letters, nor did he know where they had put them. He had never given anything to Father Stigatus Kamkievicus, and if the Czechist claimed that he had found them in the possession of Father Kamkievicus, let him produce a record of that search. The Czechist would not show a search report, but began shouting and threatening that they would bring a new case against my brother. He inquired about me. My brother replied that I was working and living in his apartment with his wife. In spite of threats, my brother would not sign the report, saying, "You have already forged my signature under statements drawn up by yourselves, and later put me on trial for it." Czechist Bomila ordered my brother to come to the KGB the next day for interrogation, since it was the end of the working day. On September 20th, Bomila interrogated my brother again for 2 hours and 50 minutes. He repeated the threat that he would be tried for giving information to the Chronicle of the Catholic Church in Lithuania. Here he lied, saying that Father Stigis Tomkivkis had admitted that my brother had given him the copies of those letters. My brother requested a confrontation with the priest. The Czechist, alarmed, began again to shout and change the subject. He began threatening my brother that they would not forgive him for betraying a state secret because my brother had written a petition to the chief of the KGB in Lithuania, in which he revealed that the Czechists had tried to recruit him as an informer. My brother repeated to the Czechist, as he had said in his petition, that he was to remain faithful to his Christian conscience. Then the Czechist took my file and began to try to convince my brother what a terrible criminal I was. He said that I was passing information abroad, and that the next day they were going to arrest me. They threatened to sentence me to many long years of imprisonment. They were very annoyed over the fact that my brother's petition to the chief of the KGB immediately got out abroad. They demanded to know to whom my brother had given the petition. Once again, my brother refused to sign the report, attesting that the KGB was forging his signature. Moreover, he stated that they did not need to interrogate him any longer concerning Father Stigatus Kamkievicus, nor to subpoena him, because he would never give the Czechists the testimony they needed. Bolumnia threatened to keep my brother until he signed. When my brother refused to be intimidated, they released him, with the additional threat that they would avenge themselves for everything. At 3 p.m. on July 22, 1983, in a black KGB Volga, the Czechists picked up my brother's wife, Mirtia Sedunia, from her place of employment. She works as an oculist at the Vilnius Polyclinic. They took her to KGB headquarters and began demanding that she turn over underground literature which, according to the Czechists, she had received 2 weeks previously. Mirtia replied that she had not received anything, and that if the Czechists knew so much, then they should have picked up that literature themselves. The Czechists would not give their names, saying, "The day is past when we gave names." They tried to force Mirtia to testify that if I did not stay at home, that I was a vagrant. Mirtia told them that I was living and spending nights in my apartment, but that I often returned late when she was already in bed and left early before she arose. And so it happened. Mirtia signed the record of her interrogation, since they threatened not to release her until she signed, and she had to pick up her little daughter, who had been left at the polyclinic. Now she is seriously worried lest the Czechists falsify her testimony. Releasing her, they threatened to bring her to trial, just like her husband, and not just leave her in peace. On June 13, 1983, I sent Andropov and the chief prosecutor of the USSR many petitions signed by believers in Lithuania protesting the unjust sentencing of Father Alphonsus Sarvestikas and the criminal arrest of Father Stigatus Tamkevikas and his incarceration in the KGB cellars under the libelous accusation of anti-Soviet activity. These petitions were signed by tens of thousands of believers in Lithuania. All of these petitions I sent in my own name and with my own return address. The KGB, unable to avenge themselves on me, directly began terrorizing my brother's wife. May the Lord be merciful to them all.